This is an adult podcast made by adults for adults. On this episode, we talk about Femmes, a French New Wave film, which is like the first foreign movie we've talked about in 2 months or something. Suede gets me so fucking pissed off, completely triggered. So if you want to hear me incredibly upset, this is a great episode. It's a great episode anyhow, because we talk a lot about Robert Downey Jr., who is my favorite person in the world. Let's start the episode after we listen to some posture.
Welcome to Fake Film Fan. It's a movie podcast for thoughtful degenerates.
Wow, someone's pretty
your
excited.
Smooth voice. Can you not?
Oh, sorry.
Can you not fucking fuck my shit?
Your excitement made me excited.
I am
excited. Sorry.
Okay, just give me a fucking second. My name's Suede Best, and I've got a smooth voice and a smooth microphone. What is
I'm
that?
I'm Walter. So I was panting not because of your sexy voice, because I think that's what people would naturally incline to think.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were doing.
No. I'm panting because I'm on major withdrawals, Suede.
What kind of withdrawals?
I think for the past 4 episodes, we've done English movies. I'm on a major
that's
withdrawal
true.
For
that's
a fucking
true.
Foreign
that's
film.
True.
We are on constant English movies, and I'm on
yeah,
a
oh,
fucking
right, right.
withdrawal. My hands are shaking. My eyes are boiling. I think I'm losing air, and my boogers are falling out.
Your boogers.
Yeah, my boogers.
Your boogers are falling out. You got a fever. You're shaking. You're twitching.
I know. It's been really tough. 4 weeks, I think. So that's 8 months. Not 8 months. 2 months.
It's 16 years. 16 dog years. 16 freaking dog years.
Isn't
man.
That your favorite song, Modern Baseball? It's been 16 years since I've did something.
It's been 16 years since yeah. Fucking incel rock, man. Fucking Modern Baseball is not quite incel rock. It's occasionally incel adjacent. I'd say it's about as incel adjacent as Weezer. I just have to quickly say, whenever we mention Weezer, Walter edits in a thing he says about how they perpetuate yellow fever, which is true, but he doesn't tell me that he's gonna put that in, so it makes me seem like an asshole. So let me just make a qualifying statement that Weezer is just like this terrible yellow fever band that murders Asian women with their blades.
It's just across the street.
It's just across the street.
I've never said this anything about Weezer.
I agreed with you, but you put that edit in without me being able to be
and
like,
I took
yeah,
it
you're right,
out
Walt.
After you complained.
You did not.
I did.
You did not. It's still in the episode. I've heard it.
That's probably because your cash is fucked.
Oh, really?
Okay, for everyone who doesn't know, Spotify keeps your fucking cash after you listen to an episode, unless you like clear the cache. I don't really get it. If I like hear something that went really wrong on an episode and I edit it and then put it back on Spotify, my Spotify keeps giving me the old version no matter what.
That's okay. That's
okay.
All right.
So what is an incel rock band?
Okay, so like within the philosophy of the incel identity is this really caustic belief that women owe you something or that they're objects, right? There are like I think two forms of incels, right? Because the actual definition of an incel is unintentionally celibate. I think.
I thought it just meant in cells.
No, it's not. You're dumb. You're stupid. But to me, incel is taking the term of anyone who like perpetuates sort of violence against women in a very traditional way. There are two types. One is like the dude who's like, yo, fuck all these bitches, you know, like the Chad. And then there's the incel that I think more people think about, which is the guy who like can't seem to find himself a partner and get any forms of physical intimacy because he sees women as objects or stuff like that. So incel rock is this kind of music that like objectifies women in a very sad, poor little me, I'm a nerd kind of way. Going back to Weezer, My Girl, I can't remember if that's the title, but it's My Girl Has a Big Mouth That Means She Blabbers a Lot. That song has got some incel vibes.
So incel rock is a term that has been put onto bands from the past.
Well, there are some bands who I think are incel rock who would not identify as such. One of my problematic faves, Negative XP, they have a few really, really good bangers, but they are terrible, terrible people, and they have some incel rock songs.
Are there bands that consider themselves incel rock?
I don't know. This might not be an actual term. This might just be something I've coined. I don't know. But to me, incel rock is like, I'm always nice to you and you'll never kiss me because I'm in high school. No, 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 no. You know, like.
Yeah, the Beatles.
The Beatles. The Beatles. No, but I mean, because when you compare it to like, there is like good pop punk that is not incel adjacent. Blink-182 is one of those that I don't think has a whole lot of incel vibes.
But why did everyone have sex to Adam's song?
Why are you having sex to a song about suicide? That is a rough song to have sex to.
Really? Every single 4chan porn gif I've seen is like a guy doing doggy style to a girl to Adam's song.
Okay, that's so bizarre to me. Because Adam's song is, I never thought I'd die alone. Yeah. No, that's not fun. Do you remember Normal Daniel?
His name wasn't Normal Dan, it was Normie Dan.
Yeah, but we called him Normal Daniel because he also got mad when we called him Normie Dan.
Oh, that's fair. He's going to hunt this podcast now.
Yo, Normie Dan, shout out.
Very quickly before this Normie Dan story. In my middle school, we had teachers who all had nicknames. Some of them, if they heard you say their nickname, would chase you to your home.
And do what? Just beat you?
No, to like scold you. But they would run like 10 minutes. I've had friends who ran home and he chased them to their home.
What kind of nicknames were they? Were they like chubby fatso or just like...
The person who would chase us had a very square face. So we called him Wawong, which was a play on his name and a television.
Okay. That's pretty awesome. No, but so the reason I even bring up Normie Dan is because he thought the best song to have sex to was Sex and Candy by Marcy's Place.
Oh, I thought it was Hey by the Pixies.
It might have been Hey by the Pixies. Or maybe it was Where's My Mind. It was something terrible. It was one of those three songs.
It was definitely Pixies, because I remember people would talk about listening to him have sex and Hey by the Pixies was blasting out of his room.
That's so weird. That's so insane. I don't think I've ever had sex to music.
I have never had sex, so... But
you fucking loser.
Yeah.
What about when I fuck you, Walt? What about that?
Adam's song, I guess.
We don't play music. We would play Adam's song. I never thought you'd die alone.
No. My answer to you about that is, I think I haven't had enough sex to know, because the people who I've had sex with don't share music tastes with me.
That's true.
They would want to put on, like, Fetty Wap. And, like, I like Fetty Wap, but I'm not gonna fucking have sex to Fetty Wap. If I found someone who, like, loved a band that I loved, then maybe.
I see. I feel like if I was gonna have sex to music, I would want it to be a metronome. Just like a click, click. To help me with my rhythm.
Yeah.
I find music so distracting.
But to me, sex doesn't have to be a concentrated thing, right? It depends on how comfortable
you are. That's
why, because
that's because you're bad at it. That's because you're not good at it.
No, I think sex is pretty boring if you always have to perform it perfectly. I think it's fun if you are able to be awkward and uncomfortable with whoever you're having sex with. And if music can help that, make you guys giggle because you're fucking to some guy who's graduating from high school, I think that's great. You just need to find the right person to have sex with.
What is fucking to having some kid graduate? What does that mean?
Like, never meant by American
football.
Oh,
that's a weird one to have sex with. Jesus fucking Christ. The cleanup song by Barney?
Yeah, if you want to do that, I think that could be fun. I'm not saying like every single sex you do now has to be with music. I'm just saying if you want to spice something up because maybe your sex life is getting boring, maybe consider putting on a song just for some fun.
You hear that?
Do some fake film karaoke fans. While you're fucking.
Exactly. You guys can sing, I'm just thinking of something. Shut up. Don't include this. I'm thinking of something funny. Give me a second. Anything you can do, I can do better. The one Fred is there. Anything you can do, I can do better. Anything I can do better than you.
Is that from How I Met Your Mother?
No, it's like from a fucking old school musical. What's wrong with you?
I don't know what that song is, dude.
You know what? I'm going to fuck you too, Walter. I'm going to play the funeral. The funeral song. Da-na-na. No, that's not the funeral song. That's the graduation song.
Here comes the ride. Oh, fat
here
and wine.
Good and wine. Yep, that's what we'll play. Next time we have sex, we'll play that song.
Okay. The funeral song is Stop the Clocks because it makes me cry.
No, there has to be a funeral song. Oh, dun, 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 dun. You know that one?
Nope.
Okay. What kind of songs do they play in Chinese funerals?
Fuck if I know. I actually don't go to many funerals. So the one funeral I went to, a bunch of like Taoist monks came around and banged drums to scare the ghosts from hell to prevent those demons from taking my grandpa away.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, it is cool, but it's not like a karaoke song.
Can you like do like an impression of these Taoist monks?
I mean, I kind of think I have to like stand because there's a lot of dancing.
Stand.
Involved.
It's a good bit when we stand.
No, it's not a good bit. And then I have to sit back down and set up my mic fucking position again.
Okay, well, see, here's the problem. If I do it, it's going to be racist, even though I really want to.
Yeah, because you don't even know what you're doing.
I don't even know, so it would be the most racist.
Okay, my withdrawal symptoms are kicking in right now, so I have to talk about foreign movies to make up for lost time. Oh yeah, I was thinking about this because you were talking about not wanting to travel and you wanted to travel into SpongeBob instead of traveling to real places. And that pissed me off because I was like, damn, Suede does not want to travel to Hong Kong.
No, I do. That's one of the few places I want to go because I want to eat spicy noodles with you, my boy.
I really like foreign movies. I have many reasons why, but this specific thing for me is really important. I like them because I get to explore a culture that I usually don't get to explore.
I feel the same way about books. I agree. I'm totally with you.
But you don't read foreign books about Hong Kong, right?
No, a lot of the translated lit I read tends to be Latin American, actually, because there's like a little bit of a renaissance of Latin American horror that's like just absolutely fantastic. You know what I have been reading, though? It's called Beijing Sprawl. Totally fantastic collections of short fiction by a Chinese dude, and it's really, really, really good. About like these rooftop teens living in like the 2000s.
Okay, I thought of a game because my language skills are so bad, so I think this will be very fun. I'm gonna read out a name of a film and the director.
Oh, and I have to guess where it's from?
Yeah, and then I will probably talk about exactly what new cultural thing I discovered, and I'm gonna read it out in their language, so it might be racist.
It might not be racist, but it will be incomprehensible.
Correct.
For it to be racist, you would have to affect like a fake accent. The movie will be like Amor de Amor, and you'll be like Amor de Amor, and I'm like, what is that? By Frequiso de Gluga, and I'm like, oh, do you mean Francois de Gugla? So let's fucking hear this.
All right, let's go. So the first one is incredibly fucking difficult. Okay.
Okay.
A Pink Flamingo by John Waters.
Fucking douchebag, cuckold son of a bitch, motherfucker. Oh, that's is that Wolf Warrior? Is that Wolf Warrior?
Wolf Warrior is not a language, but that's close. Try again.
No, but are you talking about the movie Wolf Warrior?
No, it's Pink Flamingo by John Waters.
Oh, that's from Baltimore, right?
That is, but what language did he speak?
Baltimorean.
That's good. Damn, if you said English, I would have called you out, but you're right. It is Baltimore.
They speak Baltimorean over there. They speak Baltimorean.
So what I learned from that film is that anal prolapse isn't from porn.
Oh,
it's from American culture.
Okay, yeah, it's true. It's true. It's very true. Anal prolapse is exclusively an American. It's actually a culture-bound syndrome. In no other cultures does anal prolapse happen. It's an inherently American disease.
It's not a disease. Damn.
It's not a disease. It's a condition. It's a thing that happens. I guess is a cut a disease? Not really.
Isn't it an ability or a talent?
I think it depends on if you do it on purpose or not.
Oh, that dude was definitely doing it on purpose, dude.
And I think sometimes there can be like bad, like too much. I don't know. I think it's all... literally know nothing about anal prolapse other than that it happens sometimes, and to me it seems like not a good idea because your inside bitch should probably stay on your inside, but that's just me.
So I was joking, but this film really shocked me because I literally had your opinion, and then when I saw that scene I was like, wait, what? This isn't a porn thing? People can just do this for a movie and move their prolapse like
what?
That?
Walter, pornography is also a movie. It's the same thing.
Okay.
I don't understand. Like,
I was dumb. How about that? I'm dumb. I'm fucking stupid.
So are you saying that the only way anal prolapse could happen is if you were doing a pornographic film? Like, in no other context no. Was it humanly possible?
No, I thought it was, like, too much anal sex.
No, I mean, like, I don't know. I don't want to talk about anal prolapse anymore, dude. It's fucking foul. I mean, look, if that's your bag, if that's your kink... If that's your bag, if that's your kink, it's fine. I personally am of the belief system that you should keep your insides on your insides.
I do not. I love throwing up. It's one of my favorite things to do. Okay, the next film.
That's not your insides. That's stuff from your insides, you ass.
You stick your tongue out at me.
That's true. You're right. I'm a hypocrite. I guess I have to anal prolapse now. That's what the moral of this bit is. That's the Aesop's fable about the satyr who had to anal prolapse.
And then someone got mad because of the inconsistency of the tongue and the prolapse.
And that's why you have to blow on a hot soup to make it warm or cold.
Okay, the next film.
Next!
Is Zetsu Monogatari by Kenji Mizoguchi.
I mean, I think that's a Japanese thing, right? I mean, those all sound like Japanese words. That's pretty kind of easy.
Yeah, this one was easy. This was the first movie ever that I saw and learned that in old medieval times, Japanese women had those tiny eyebrows if they were high class.
Oh, you mean the little dots? Eyebrows that are like where the eyebrows would start?
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, never knew that before. I had to watch this movie and I was like, whoa, that's a weird look.
Do you think we could pull that off, or would that be culturally insensitive?
I think you could pull it off. I don't even know if like most Japanese people would even know you're doing Japanese things.
So it could just be like a cool thing.
I don't know if you could pull it off.
Nah, my eyebrows are like kind of important to the rest of my face because they're heavy.
I think the eyebrows are important to the women who do that too. I think it's weird. I don't think they look that good.
Wow.
Is that a hot take?
Look at fucking Western Walter over here fucking commodifying Japanese women's eyebrows. What a fucking douche.
Hey, hey, all Japanese women agree with me because they've stopped doing it.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Okay, next film. Tabiete Bijan by Sohrab Sahid Salas.
Okay, that was so terrible. That was, like, really bad. I'm guessing somewhere in the Middle East. I'm not sure.
Wow, that's good. I was going to give you that
and
as my
clue. I'm thinking because of your various film fetishes, I'm going to say Iran.
Yeah.
I know you.
Also, you knew it was from the Middle East.
Well, say the name again, because there's like a bit in the name.
Sohrab Sahid Salas.
Sahid. Sahid is, I think, a Middle true. Eastern element of names.
That was a good guess. That was a good guess.
I like names. I have a list of names that I like.
Why is your name Sweet, then?
Not my name for me, just names in general that I think are cool. Sorry. I have, like, a list.
Sahid is on there?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Though my favorite name is Richard... what was it? Richard Nicholas Dickelson. And so his name would be Rick Dick. No, fuck. Never mind. Cut the spit out.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's your favorite name. It's so unattainable.
It is. It's Dick Nick Dickelson would be the shortened name. Oh, also, I interacted with a fucking dude in my life whose name was... Never mind. Cut this bit out. I can't remember his name. Okay. Oh, it was Richard Cox.
And you like that name, Richard Cox.
Wait, that means his name is Dick Cox.
Oh, you're right. That's a good name.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Since my Persian was a disaster, and I don't think anyone could Google whatever the fuck I just said, in case you're interested in what movie I'm talking about, it's Still Life. So what I found, and I find so much food in all these films. So this was just one example of the food. I learned about a dasi Persian lentil soup from this movie, and I still have never had it authentically, but the recipes online look easy enough. So I've made it a few times. It's just like a thick lentil soup that uses potatoes and a ton of turmeric. And I would have never found this soup if I didn't watch this film. Next film, Ludwig by Luchino Visconti. It might be a trick question, but we'll try.
Yeah, because Ludwig is a German name. Can you say the guy's name again?
Luchino Visconti, I think.
Italy?
Wait a second. This might have been a bad one now I think about it, because I think the film is mostly in Italian, but then I think there is German in it. So it ended up not being a trick question. I fucked up. I'm sorry.
Well, I also picked both answers correct, so.
Back when I was 14, I went to Munich and thought it was the most boring fucking city in the entire universe, and it made me hate Germany. And then I watched this movie. It was about Ludwig II, who apparently built a bunch of beautiful castles in Munich. And you know how I've like been anti-Europe for a while? Or like I just haven't had the desire to like care about Europe or go to Europe. Watching this movie, I felt it again. I wanted to go back to Europe and like see these fucking castles that this guy was building. Okay, none of these were very hard. So this last
one. No, they were all very easy.
Let's try this one. Fucking Umau by Lucas Moodysson.
Can you spell Lucas Moodysson?
I mean, I wrote on my notes the way I would pronounce it, not maybe his real name.
Oh, okay, so that's absolutely no help.
No, but Lucas is for sure L-U-K-A-S.
Is it like a movie like in Afrikaans?
No, think of a language that uses the sounds. When I said fucking Umau, Umau is spelled A-M-A-L.
I have no clue.
It's Swedish.
Oh, yeah, see, I don't know anything about those fuckers.
How about when I go Lund from that Danish TV show, The Killing?
Here's the things I can tell you about that area of the world. It's very cold. Apparently, Switzerland has very good healthcare and very good childcare too. And a lot of dark procedural thriller novels come from like Sweden, Iceland, Norway, that area. That's literally all I know.
But you love metal music.
Yeah, but I like American metal.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Or that's not true, because I there's like some Polish power metal that I really like and stuff like that. But for the most part, a lot of the metal I listen to.
Yeah, you're not a huge fan of black metal then, basically.
Yeah. I like songs about like wizards and dragons and stuff like that, which tends to be American.
Not like incel metal.
I don't know if it's incel metal. I don't know what it is. Also, you run the danger of when you listen to European metal of it being National Socialist metal, aka Nazi.
That's
metal.
What I mean. They like talk about killing people and burning people's houses, like Burzum.
Yeah, but see, I'm down with burning people and murdering their houses. I just...
You're not down with Hitler.
I'm just not down with Hitler. Yeah. If we're gonna burn down people's houses, we should just do it because it's fucking anarchy, not because, like, fucking the Jews.
The drummer of Empire, that band, he killed someone not because he was anarchist. He just killed someone because he was curious how it would feel.
Nah, that is pretty cool. But again, that I don't fuck with Nazis,
cool.
So...
Dude.
Yeah, it is pretty
what
cool.
What is wrong with you? Also, I think the what band is Emperor, not Empire.
If you want some good power metal, or some good fucking stoner metal, power metal, check out Pathfinder. Stoner metal, check out Acid Mammoth. Both kick so much ass.
No, but music is a good, important thing because, of course, watching movies from different countries, you get soundtracks. So in fucking Ao Mao, it's about two teenage girls who are like angsty and like gay, but their town is super small and they realize they're gay by listening to like super Swedish pop music. That sounds like Oasis. So it's like Swedish Brit pop band. So I discovered like Broder Daniel from them and Jylene Tyler. They're better than Oasis.
Oh, yeah, and Dinkus Malinkus. I love Dinkus Malinkus.
Wow. Why do you want to be mean to some fucking Swedish pop musicians, dude?
And Chorgel Dorgel Dangleson. Oi, hey, my name is a Chorgel Dorgel Dangleson. I'm from Norway.
Dude, you know the accent. Why did you fucking say you don't know anything about the language, you fucking liar?
That was just my guess. That was just what I imagined they sounded like. That's also my German accent also a little bit.
No, it wasn't.
Wait, what a silly place Europe is. What a silly, silly place filled with silly people. Well, you know what's pretty funny? You did almost no countries about black people. So what does that say about you?
That I hate black people?
Okay, there we go. You said it. Not me.
Unfortunately, when I get a peek in the window of their culture, it usually feels a little gross. And then it's also usually I see a food they eat. And I didn't want to make it all just like six types of different countries of Africa's food.
I think it's worth saying, though, that I don't think it's inherently gross. I think you probably feel like it's gross. Whether it is or is not is its own complicated question, but I don't think it's inherently gross.
I just think in less colonized societies, a lot of the stories and narratives come from within its culture itself. It's so much less when you compare to Africa, so you're worried that, and you're not even worried, you know the history of any mediums about Africa is so much based on ethnography compared to me personally. I feel way less gross watching a movie from Europe and being like, oh my God, that culture's so fucking bizarre. If I use that same exact terms on a movie about Ghana, it's gonna feel a little different.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, that's my point. Yeah.
Since you're on a pronunciation kit, can you give us the name of this movie and the person who directed it?
Okay. Femmes, directed by Paul Vecelli. Well, also, very quickly, rest in peace, Vecelli. He actually died this year, January 18th.
Oh, no.
But he was like 90-something. He was kind of old.
What did he die from? Old manitis?
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't do much research. I just saw news he died during January.
Way to bring down the podcast, man. Fucking bummer.
So was this film.
And I gotta say, the first part was very boring. The basic premise is it's... you want to do the plot, Jim?
Yeah, sure. Amor je t'aime tu vivra. Plot jingle.
Le plot jingle.
Le plot jingle.
I will give you the plot jingle. Let me kiss your lips. So beautiful. Drink the wine with me, monsieur.
Drink the wine. There was a lot of wine in this film and
there
a lot
was a
of
lot
jingles.
Of wine. A lot of jingles. Man, I wish I was a pretty French lady. My life would be so much easier. So basically, there are these two out of work elderly, not elderly, but like over the hill, in quotes, past their prime, I guess, actresses who are just kind of scamming their way through the middle age of their life and just drinking and being sad and upset. When you first actually brought this up to me, you said it had Baby Jane vibes. And so I was surprised at how much smarter I think this movie is than Baby Jane.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah. Because I love Baby Jane, but I think Baby Jane takes liberties with humans a little bit. The descent into madness from the viewer's perspective feels very genre-y. It feels very horror-y in a very like stylized 1960s kind of way. It's full of pomp, it's full of drama, it's full of like overacting, and it's really satisfying to watch, and it's very creepy, but it is not particularly realistic, if that makes sense. You know, when you actually see people going through these sort of like transformations, it's heavily dramatized, and this I think it felt real to me.
Would actually use the word real, huh?
Not in all of the sections.
Because I don't think it was dramatized, but I don't know if I could get there with realer.
Why is that?
Because I think there's like too much filmmaking going on that distances that itself from that reality. So if you're talking about Hollywood movies, I've been thinking about this so much more talking to you on the podcast, because there is a type of art house film that when I want to talk to you about, I already know that you're going to find it slow. And one of the things I was thinking about was why this film wasn't real, because it's hard to relate to, and you can blame that on the filmmaking or the way the characters talk. And this still could mean that this film is more real, or maybe that's the thing, right? Maybe reality is not relatable.
Here's where I think some of the reality comes from. In Baby Jane, you have a prescribed narrative. There's very little play with the camera. There's very little acknowledge of the audience. Lines are delivered not to the camera or in dreamlike statements. When stuff is being said, there's a reason it's being said. It's being said to the characters. There's like one scene in Baby Jane where she kind of vamps to the camera, and that's like the big spooky scene. But in general, it's a movie that wants you to ignore the fact that it is a movie. And because of that, the things that happen that are real feel very story-ish, if that makes sense. And in this movie, because there's more playing with the camera and more playing with the act of movies, when the characters deliver these like really weird lines, it feels like very honest. It feels like very raw. Like, so for instance, towards the end of the film, the brunette, do you remember their names?
One is Helen, one is Sonia. Helen's a blonde one.
Oh, so then it's Sonia.
The one who got drunk later.
Yes. So she's standing in the middle of the street holding two wine bottles saying, "My name is Sonia and I'm an alcoholic. My name is Sonia and I'm an alcoholic." And she's just like screaming it as the camera slowly pans away.
Je m'appelle Sonia Savianche et je suis alcoolique. Je m'appelle Sonia Savianche et je suis alcoolique. Je m'appelle Sonia Savianche et je suis alcoolique. Et je suis alcoolique. Je suis alcoolique.
Because the scream is not to anyone except the viewing audience, it feels like really honest. There's this weird level of instant communication, you know, that I think actually you can see, because this also has singing in it. Some of the more honest and weird sections of Dancer in the Dark are like this. Mm. But because there's like choreography going on in Dancer in the Dark, when they're singing, it feels more like a musical, to where when the characters are singing in this, it's just like them singing. And so it feels really intimate, and it gets across some really uncomfortable, weird ideas really quickly and like very intimately.
Maybe if I could add to it, there's a acting in Hollywood films that is so dramatized, as you said, that this film doesn't have. So when she's yelling on the streets, "I'm an alcoholic," in a Hollywood film, it would feel so much more dramatized, and that would be like a scene.
Yeah, she'd be shaking her hands and shaking her hair, and like there'd be like music swells in the background, and she'd like fake fall onto her knees and stuff in that very like actor-y
It might
way.
Rain.
Yeah. But in this, it's just like watching a human being stand and yell.
There's this speech that I remember pretty hardcore from Helen. Oh, Helen like breaks up with her boyfriend or something. She basically sings a very sad song, then gets to the scene where Sonia comes back and sees Helen and is like excited because she found a bunch of money on the floor and is trying to cheer Helen up. And Helen's like in a bad mood and a bitch mood, kind of like my mood when I'm in a bad mood and you're trying to make me happy and I'm just rejecting you.
It wasn't her boyfriend, it was her job, right?
Yeah, but they were definitely like fucking, right?
There was some flirting going on. It's not necessarily super obvious what is going on. I think that scene in particular is interesting when you come closer to the end, because in that scene, Helen, the blonde, is consoling this man who she acts as a maid for and is saying, like, oh, you didn't want a wife, you wanted a mom. You know, you need to stop being so pitiful. Like, you're a cuckold just like everyone else. I mean, she literally says that. Later on in the film, a man comes to see her and is responding to a want ad. He's like, I want you to be my mother and, like, have sex with me. Like, I want you to do both at the same time. And she's, like, trying to be intimate with him, but he freaks out and, like, says she's too, I don't know, like, whorish or something.
Yeah, because he wants a mutter, but then he starts realizing she also wants money, and that makes him doubt the mutter kind of relationship, his mutter fetish.
Viens, viens, là.
Non, 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 non. No.
And so you have this, like, really interesting degradation where it goes from, like, having a job and being able to be a mother figure to being so out of choices and options that your only one is to use these two things you have as a way to make money. She even says, I can also be a maid. I can be a maid. I can be your mother. I mean, so she's trying to get back this thing she once had, but making it transactional, right? Which I think is another, the realness of this film is the way people are used up by the machine. I think this movie would call it, like, the Hollywood machine.
Well, I wonder too if the realness is almost the acting in itself. Going back to that speech of Helen's that I really like, where Sonia's like, why are you being so mean to me? And Helen basically says something like, I don't know what role you're trying to play. Sometimes you're playing this role, sometimes you're playing this role, sometimes you're playing this role.
Change ton registre, moi j'arrive plus à te suivre. En cinq minutes, tu m'as fait le numéro de la comédienne, le numéro de la midinette qui trouve un gros billet, celui de la petite bourgeoise gourmande, celui de la grande amie attentionnée. À quoi faut-il croire? Qu'est-ce qui est vrai là-dedans?
I think there's, like, three things you can talk about when she's saying that. One is the alcohol itself, because the doctor basically says one of the mental symptoms of alcoholism is big mood swings. So there's this idea that when you're under the influence, your role or your identity or your person is constantly fluctuating. Then I think she's talking about Sonia herself, right? Because Sonia is an actress. She's practicing with her friend Helen. She's trying to keep positive about their life. And then I just think this film shares that same vision of acting in itself, where in a Hollywood film, your characters get developed and you sort of trust the development. This film's characters sway from their development at times really randomly with some of the things they do. Now that you're talking about the realness, in reality, our roles are not carefully developed like an author can develop us. And when we're together, that's when misunderstanding, that's when confusion, that's when arguments happen, because sometimes we present a so-called role or an act that the other person finds shocking and is like, wait, I don't get this.
See, I think this movie hates filmmaking and filmmakers in particular and the whole industry of film.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about filmmaking being, like, inherently violent or problematic based on the fact that it is a voyeur machine. Mm-hmm. So in What Happened to Baby Jane, there is a lot of jealousy between the two sisters. Mm-hmm. And you could say that is a symptom of the capitalist, misogynistic, whatever you want to call it, machine that's playing sister against sister. But it's not really portrayed like that all that much. You have to dig. And I think you could find that, but it is not the overarching theme. In this movie, because it constantly flashes, this is, like, something that happens often in the film, especially when the characters are upset between their aged faces and the faces of them when they were in movies, like, young and beautiful.
Those are actually real actresses.
But it's supposed to be their faces, right?
Gene Wilder was there.
Regardless, the juxtaposition of youth
and age. Not Gene Wilder, sorry.
Age.
Like, Gene Wilder's a man. I'm fucking stupid.
Yeah, I was just going to let that one pass because I have no I was thinking, like, I don't think I would have remembered fucking Gene Wilder's goddamn face.
I met
face.
That girl in fucking, not Betty White, that who the other girl, the wheelchair woman in Baby Jane.
Oh, Yulia Yachenko.
Joanne, yes. Crawford? Is that her name?
Joanne Crawfish?
Okay. You hate crawfish. Fuck off.
I like crawfish. I don't eat them unless they're fresh. The only places I ever go that have crawfish are, like, nasty buffets. And I'm like, I'm not about to eat some fucking buffet seafood. Fuck that.
I feel like last time we talked about crawfish, you were like, no shit, I don't eat that. That's mud insects.
I mean, they are creepy. They are definitely mud insects. It does freak me out. You fucking totally made me lose my train of thought, you fucking gremlin. Because you're flashing between this juxtaposition of these youthful faces and these women who their avenues of success are slowly eroding, there's, like, a really consumptive feeling you get from the film industry. That's their job, is like to be consumed and to be used. And I think it is unhappy with the nature of film in general, which I think is part of why it feels more real. It is using symptoms of an ugly machine while still using that machine.
I didn't think of it like that, but if that is how I can view it, that is like some of the stuff that I love the most. Doing things you know are trash and terrible, but still continuing to use it because it's the only source of your, like, energy or your spirit. You say he hates movies.
Maybe he doesn't hate movies, but there is a theme of the way media consumes the feminine experience.
Yeah, and this film does it too.
Which is, like, if you're talking about the 70s, very second wave feminist. This is the kind of questions that was going on in the 70s. This was the beginning of second wave era feminism, the consumptive nature of the male gaze.
Yeah, all sex is rape. I can't reference Catherine McKinnon on the podcast.
You can. What she has to say has nothing to do with this movie we're talking about right now. You just wanted to say all sex is rape. You want to just throw that in there when I'm like actually trying to make a useful point. No, it's fine. You're a fucking asshole. You're a douchebag. You're a fucking Chinese gremlin. It's fine. Idiot.
What I'm starting to think about too is if you ask someone who's like, hey, you're really upset about the consumption of women in film, what type of film would you make about it? I think most people would be like, well, I'll make a biopic, or I'll make a documentary, I'll make something very realistic. But still, this film chose not to do that, albeit with a bunch of filmmaking techniques that distance you. It was still very, very fictional and kind of a narrative. If he's so anti women being consumed in film, this film itself does perpetuate women being consumed in film, though, correct?
That is a complicated question, right? I have a book I really like called A Boy and His Dog, written by Harlan Ellison, who wrote I Have No Mouth But I Must Scream.
Based on the famous video game.
Yeah, based on the famous video game, right? Totally fantastic author. And he wrote this book called A Boy and His Dog, and it's asking similar questions about the consumptive nature of the male gaze and stuff like that. And the feminist literary community at the time was divided. Some people thought it was a fantastic critique, and some people thought it was violence and pornography against women. And a similar thing happened in the 90s when the movie came out. Having read A Boy and His Dog, I think there's kind of a little bit of both. I think there's like definitely social critique in there, and there are questions, but I think Harlan Ellison also kind of relishes in the violence a little bit. And I think that's also very normal for a horror author, which you don't see these from male horror authors very often. These kind of questions asked so delicately, both delicately and indelicately, because you got another short story, and I cannot remember the title, about a young woman who on the bus finds that she's being psychically assaulted, that there's like a man who's like molesting her in her mind and keeps doing it to her.
Based on the video game Hollow Knight.
Anytime I talk about books. And so she ends up trapping him in her own mind in this like fucked up spike prison to be tortured for the rest of her life. She knows that both she's punished him, but he'll always be in her head. It's like this weird questions about like trauma and stuff like that, but it's also pretty graphic. And so I think making a movie that asks a question that also perpetuates the question that is being asked is one that comes down to personal perception. So like, I think if you asked the women acting in this movie, their response would be different from a woman watching it versus us watching it. My personal opinion is when this movie interacts with the women's bodies themselves, not their faces and their minds and their articulation, it's not arousing. It's not consumptive in a erotic way. Okay, so first of all, I thought these women were so hot, so
okay,
I'm still consumed.
I thought these
with those
women
bodies
were hot too.
Hell so. Yeah, consuming bodies in the male gaze, baby. I saw a titty and I was like, fuck yeah.
We were the guy.
We were the bad guy. We were the monster in this
No,
movie.
Not the bad guy. We were the guy who wanted a mommy.
Yes, that's true. Oh, mommy.
That's the scene. He was like, mommy, no. And then pushed her away. And then he got stabbed.
For some reason.
Well, that was my point about the characters being like different roles and inconsistent, where regular development wouldn't allow that character to end up stabbing him.
Oh, see, I was sort of thinking, I think this movie has unreliable narrators, if that can be a thing, or the movie's not interested in the reality of the actions. The point of the movie is not like that this happened and now they have to deal with the repercussions of the violence against the man they stabbed. That act of violence is more symbolic.
That's true. The doctor did talk about like one of the symptoms of alcoholism.
Is delirium.
Hallucinations.
Yeah, hallucinations and delirium.
Yeah. And I didn't catch that. You're actually right. There could be a lot of delirium in this film, which I didn't really think about. That's a really good point,
too. My cat really wants to go outside. She's just looking at me and meowing. Lola.
Hey, your cat gets another appearance on the podcast.
Do you want to come on the podcast again, little meow? Oh, she's mad, though. Oh, she's mad. Oh, my face.
So the cat just scratched Slade's face. He might need to go to the hospital. His glasses just flew off.
She just knocked my glasses off my face. She was mad.
She's mad. She's angry.
She's always mad on the podcast.
Yeah, but it's because she doesn't like it when I pick her up. She hates being picked up. No, I think I think this movie has a lot of respect for the female actors. I think it gives them a lot of space. We talked about sort of like the empathy that Lars von Trier has for Bjork and Dancer in the Dark. I think this movie has a lot of empathy for its female characters.
I really agree with
this. I think
this.
It really comes through in the filmmaking in particular. The amount of times the characters are just them on screen and that's it. And you're just giving them time to speak and trust that they'll be able to act. Like, there's a very long one shot of just them talking about love and sex and dicks. They talk about dicks a lot.
Masturbation.
Yeah. It just like goes on for a very long time, and there's like the filmmaker trusts that the actresses are going to deliver the scene correctly, and they do. It's a fantastic scene.
Their names are Helen and Sonia, by the way.
Oh, that's their real names? Yeah, that's I think another interesting. Yeah.
And I think if I could trust this director in the gut feeling, you almost feel the friendship between all three of them, the director and the two women, in the movie in itself.
To take like a broader step back, if we're talking about how we talk about film, there's no way any of us can know anything about the filmmaker, right? I mean, like, even when you interview someone, these things take on their own lives as they're being made. And so I think what it comes down to is what you perceive, which is why I think this movie does its best to present a level of honesty and respect and space for the women on screen, in part because it's an inconsistent narrative.
Dude, I think that's so beautiful. I think that was beautifully said and beautifully seen in the film. That's like such a beautiful way to like view an artistic project. That there are a lot of movies that are very like, I need everything to be right. And I like those movies. I'm not saying they're all bad. Because all these projects, as you said, no one can get to exactly where they want to be completely with respect. There's so much complexities with doing art that's voyeristic, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But personally for me, as long as you try, and if that feeling of trying can be transferred to the viewer, that shit is the shit that gets me in so much cinema.
Yeah, Gummo, I think, is another one that offers a lot of space. Iron Man offers a lot of space. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. just really gets to like...
What, you mean like in his fucking helmet, his brain is a lot of space because he's stupid?
No, he just gets to like be himself. He's like, it's just very honest. I think this movie is almost as good as Iron Man, personally.
I don't even hate Iron Man. I hate Robert Downey Jr.
You don't think he's just so open and honest in these Iron Man films? He's just like so real.
No, I think he's too stupid to understand what he's doing.
We're gonna get Robert Downey Jr. on the podcast one day, and you're gonna have to apologize.
Okay, do it.
You're gonna have to apologize.
I'm not gonna apologize.
Yes, you will.
I'm gonna question his brain. It's gonna be like Stephen Bay when he was on that Transformers speech and didn't know how to answer anyone's questions.
You mean Michael Bay?
I guarantee Robert Downey Jr. is that fucking dumb.
You're so mean. So unkind. We love you, Robert Downey Jr. in every movie you've ever been in. Even the one where you did blackface.
Tropic Thunder?
Yeah. I've actually never seen that movie.
Okay. Actually, that doesn't justify it. But I know, like, a bunch of them were like, well, we asked a bunch of black people if it was okay.
Dude, I don't know. I probably wouldn't, if I was going to make a movie, do blackface. I don't think that would be what I'd put in my movie, personally.
I give you the yellow face card. If you want to direct a movie, I think it's okay, sweet.
If I was going to make a movie that had yellow face in it, it would be you. I would just want you to, like, increase it. Like, make it look more.
Oh, because I'm not a real Asian.
Actually, you want to fuck about yellowface, blackface, bamboozled. I watched that like junior year of high school with Celine. Man, that's a fucking movie right there. It's good. I mean, it's just like if we're talking about blackface, like fuck.
I sat through Broken Flowers, D.W. Griffith's Broken Flowers.
Oh, he's got a yellowface movie too? I didn't know that. Oh, is that the one that like, what's that director? One of the famous Japanese directors loves?
Akira Kurosawa loves Broken
Flowers.
Yeah,
that's the one Kurosawa loves. So weird.
Just a white guy squinting the whole time. And smoking opium. Well, when you initially brought this, you said, I thought this movie was smarter, and I thought this movie was more real. And I just was hesitant to both of them, because I kind of felt a movie like Baby Jane delivers its message more clear. But as of this conversation, I think I understand more what you mean. And I'm wondering if it's not, like, more real. When a project deals with these type of layers of hypocrisy, contradictions, and just tries its hardest to get through it to create the final thing... Is that real?
It's honest.
Is it?
Yeah, it's kind of like Tony Stark. It makes all these weapons.
Okay.
That he sells to countries. and then he sees the damage his weapons do, and so he has to build an Iron Man robot suit to save the day. And so it's, like, so real and honest, because Robert Downey Jr. is also shooting lasers out of his hands, because it's real, just like Iron Man.
I never realized that was what Iron Man was about.
That's literally the whole movie. The whole thing is just like, oh, shit.
Dude, when I watch Marvel movies, I don't think.
But, dude, this is like...
These
are like things he says in the movie. He's like, man, I really sucked. I'm glad I'm not terrible now. Those are, like, things he says in the movie, is that he, like, feels guilty about making all these weapons.
I think the problem is me.
Yeah, you get so triggered at Mr. Robert Downey Jr. and his sweet robot shenanigans that you just turn off.
I turn off my brain in every Marvel film, though. Like, I barely understood, not Black Lives Matter. What's that stupid film? Black Panther.
That stupid film, Black Lives Matter. That's right. My name is Walter, and I hate Black Lives Matter, and I hate Black Panther. Okay. I think it's weird that the big Marvel movie about blackness is the one you decided to call stupid. I think that's interesting. I think we should unpack.
No. I just referenced it because it's the one Marvel movie with a reputation of a message. Garvey vs. Who's the other guy? What was that guy's name? God damn it. W.E. Du Bois? Was it Du Bois and Garvey? Or Du Bois was way older, right?
Yeah. But I know you're talking about separatism versus...
And I barely understood it because my brain was off.
I still think you hate black people, so... Hashtag cancel Walter. I feel like I am the Black Panther of this podcast.
Whoa. That's like one step behind blackness.
Oh, no. Come on. Don't say that. No, but I think you're right. The more answers you have to questions, the less honest it gets, because the more people can disagree with that answer. The more you just have open-ended things being presented to you, the more honest it feels, because it's not about whether it's right or wrong. It's like, look at this thing I'm thinking about.
And it's not just open-ended. Open-ended is like Megan. Is... this killer robot bad? Open-ended. It's more like you see the struggle of tackling the question.
Without having answers. Because if you look at Dancer in the Dark, Lars von Trier answers his question.
I hate people.
Yeah, I hate people. I hate women. There are things that I like that answer questions. Like, A Boy and His Dog answers the question.
1 + 1 = 2.
1 + 1 = 2. And that's why I hate women. That's what the moral of The Boy and His Dog is.
I realized A Boy and His Dog was set in 2024.
Oh, no, it's next year. Well, and it's about the next world war, so...
Oh, shit.
The novella has a fantastic ending that is super peanut brutal. You can buy it at Book No Further. Check us out. www.booknofurther.com. If you buy things and, like, put in the notes, I'm from the podcast and I bought this book. That would, like, help me out a ton, because then I could get Dolores to give me money for the podcast, which would be cool, so...
Sponsorship from Book No Further. Dude, we do promote Book No Further a fuck ton. So.
Yeah, we do. From now on, anytime anyone, any of you buy stuff from Book No Further, just say, I'm here from Fake Film Fans.
Yes, sir, sweet. I'm doing it right
okay,
now.
Okay, buy $1,000 worth of books.
That you found the beginning a little boring. There are movies like this in Europe with, like, two hot women doing weird, absurd things.
Daisies is a good example.
Celine and Juliet go boating. What they do is cute and absurd. Is that how we would describe it? Charming?
I don't know if it's cute. They're rapscallions in the beginning of the film.
But what about the stuff like, okay, so they have some obvious jokes where they pretend to be people and they pose in, like, awkward positions. Sonia is bending up and down and opening her legs like a mannequin.
Oh, so that's the friendship that I think you're talking about. Their friendship feels really solid in the beginning.
No, I understand that's what it's developing. I feel, though, if you replaced them with two anime girls, everyone would be like, that's moe.
No. It would also depend how they're rendered.
Like how they're drawn?
Yes. If you make anime girls cute, kind of anything they do is moe, until you get to, like, brutal violence, and then it's, like, a whole thing. And honestly, actually, what that says about anime is maybe a little fucked up. Like, if you want to talk about the consumptive male gaze, what does it mean when we, like, watch anime where it's just cute girls doing cute things? And, like, what is that? Is that bad?
It's consumptive. And I don't think anyone disagrees with that.
No, but it's like, it has to be consumptive in a different way, right? It's almost like consumptive. It's like the idea of the consumptive nature of the male gaze. But there's also some like Plato stuff in there where this is the platonic form of the women. But it's like, look at this thing that is distilled femininity, which is also fucked up because it says this is what femininity looks like when there are lots of different kinds of, you know, whatever. It's all complicated. Which is why I think the most beautiful, the most honest thing. This is not like a trans thing. This is specifically men who dress up like cute women. I guess cross-dressing is maybe the term. That's the truest form of femininity because it takes only the trappings of femininity, only the things that we have put on femininity, and it puts it on the masculine forms. There's nothing more feminine than a beautiful cross-dressing man.
Sure. What if I don't use the word moe? What is the word for them, Sonia and Helen? It was an attempt to make them funny. I remember the scene when the doctor is talking about the alcoholism. The doctor is tricked to be upside down to fix his hiccups, and his head was on the stairs, so that looked funny. What about the time when Helen's working, she's using her vacuum cleaner, and the boss is on the phone and looks at her, so she turns off her vacuum, and then she gets bored, and she can't vacuum, so she plays the piano? In a way, that's a joke. None of this stuff made me laugh, per se. I hate using the word joke, because I myself did not laugh, but I thought they looked like jokes.
Well, I think this gets back to, you are interested in objects, movement, and colors, which is also things toddlers are interested in. When you talked about that experimental film that's just like twisting colors and lights, like that's what you give to like babies to like stimulate their minds. Some of these things that you like that are like not quite jokes, I think like this lady moving on screen and the music changing and the sound changing, I think that like stimulates you. But that's like a very Walterish thing. The parts that I think of as boring that are like joke adjacent engage you because of the viewer you are and the things that like stimulate.
Well, I think I'm not the only person who watches this stuff and understands it's a joke. First of all, this movie is genre'd, like if you go on something, I don't
it
know.
It claims to be a comedy.
Yeah, it claims to be a comedy. So
which is not.
That's not just me.
But it's not delivered like a joke. I disagree.
Then why would it be labeled as a comedy? So you're saying everyone else is wrong except you?
Yes.
Okay. All right, if that's the case, then I have nothing else to add there.
Why do you think it's a comedy? I think it's just, I mean, I think that's an inaccurate descriptor. It's satire. Maybe it's satire adjacent. I think it's a little too all over the place. I think it is a little hard to genreify this film.
Okay, but even if this film is miscategorized as a comedy, those genre people are trying to get at something, right? I feel like there is moments where it's something that's like closer to moe, except as we described, it's not fucking moe. It's like when Helen walks to pick up the phone or mail, I can't remember, and then she comes back with Sonia hiding, and then Sonia scares her, so Helen's face goes like, oh, and then she screams. It's not a joke, but it's something cute, a type of femininity that makes you be like, oh, something like that. And that's why I felt there was even a draw or relationship to moe in the first place. And if you just feel like there's no comedy in this movie, then there's nothing really to talk about.
I don't think that is comedy, though.
Then what is it? It's something unique.
Yeah, it's like an auto, like some pieces of media defy genre convention. This is one of them, I think. They're not built like jokes. They can't be jokes.
So
that's
what
like
are they trying to
elicit?
Is it the same thing
some
that
kind
moe
of emotional
stuff?
Response?
I know you're doing it. Yeah, I get it. It's a broad thing. Is it not similar to the moe stuff? Because is moe actually funny? No, it's just like a girl being so fucking cute and then you like giggle.
I don't giggle.
Okay, then you don't even find moe funny.
I think
if
you look at what a joke is a miniature story.
Okay, I get it.
It has
we have decided
arc.
It's not a joke. Then what is it? Don't tell me it's like anything.
No, because you have to define things first. You have to define things first, Walter.
My stake isn't in that it has to be a joke, though.
Okay, but I have to explain why it isn't a joke before I can explain what it is.
Go ahead.
He's an ad, folks. A joke is a narrative structure. There's a rising action and a fall, and the fall either has something that is meant to tickle us or is a quick diversion from what we thought the answer would be, which is also meant to tickle us. Or they're anti-jokes that are ignoring the traditional structure and just presenting something weirdly, but it's still within context of the narrative question. These scenes where these characters are just interacting with each other, I think are glimpses into intimacy.
No, because a glimpse into intimacy would be like a hug or a kiss.
No, you're thinking intimacy as in physical intimacy. I'm talking about emotional intimacy.
But that's my point. If you think about a lot of mainstream narratives, when emotional intimacy weird, it tends to be an attempt at something kind of quirky or funny.
I think emotional intimacy between friends can be that.
Yeah, and we always laugh when that happens between us. If we are doing something weird together, it's usually because we're in a moment of where we're both having fun and we're laughing.
Yeah, but I still wouldn't call that a joke, right? I don't know what that is, but it's not a joke.
Okay, that's what I said. My stake isn't in the joke thing. That's why I didn't really care about your definition of a joke.
Okay, when we are in that situation, it elicits laughter. When you view it, it elicits positive emotions because you're seeing something you yourself have experienced and enjoy.
So it elicits fun.
Or, I mean, I think it depends. I, from those scenes, got sort of like a little bit of a nervous feeling because it's the pride before the fall. This level of intimacy between two dysfunctional people can only lead to ruin. That was my perception.
Bringing it back to what you said earlier, I don't know if the film gives a lot of space to the characters in this film. I feel like it gives a lot of space to the actors to be authentic and real, but the characters don't have much space because the characters don't really do
much.
Yeah,
exactly. That's
so
very, very true.
I feel like you're not invested enough into that character to feel that fall through the character. You could feel the fall of the annoyance of the machine, as you would put it, but I don't know why the nervous energy would come about when the characters aren't worth investing in.
Maybe this is because I'm a human and you're not, but the faces they make when they're upset affect me emotionally. Okay. Like, the fact that they're upset makes me upset. Does that make sense? Does that not happen to you? Like,
no,
when you see someone
crying,
you don't. No, I was
not upset in this movie at all, dude.
Okay, what makes you upset? How do you become upset? If you see someone sitting on the street crying, what happens to your body and your mind when you view them?
Better avoid them.
Okay, that's fine. I say when you're seeing someone crying, don't you feel like I wish they weren't crying?
Maybe. I don't know. That's not my first reaction. Because I think I've only been happy when I cried. Like, I've never had a bad cry. All my cries have been healthy.
First of all, that's not true. Because you used to get blackout drunk and cry, and that was not healthy.
I think it's healthy.
Okay, it was not. Listeners, it was not.
You guys thought it was unhealthy, but we had this argument where I'm like, no, you guys are wrong. I never really decided I was wrong there. I just fucking allowed you guys to be right.
Okay. I guess I have a lot of empathy. I don't always act on it, and it can sometimes actually make me a worse person. I have found myself distancing myself with people I'm close to who have a lot of emotions because
Let's backtrack, because if we're talking about this movie in particular, you have a lot of empathy for people who are sad and depressed because you apparently did not have enough empathy for them when they were having fun.
Yeah. Well, it was also just boring. That's the other part. The only reason like this Moe stuff is interesting is because these cute girls doing cute things. The scenes are well designed. They're full of color. The girls are cute. The music is nice. Like, it's a sensory experience compounded with the fact that you can view this connection.
I doubt the sensory experience a little bit because you know if this movie was not in black and white, it would be very colorful.
Yeah, and I think it would elicit more of an emotional response.
But I think you would still found it boring.
Well, I think some of the concepts in the dialogue that are being presented are, like, outside of human connection. Like, they're like doing bits, they're doing characters, they're like doing things. It's like hard to relate to. I think as the movie progresses and you start to see the more and more human elements of these people, that is when it's like, oh man, shit, and you start like being affected. And but I think there's, in the beginning, it's like kind of just like an old movie, and so I'm like bored.
No, you don't have to laugh when you talk about boredom, right?
What, like, you want me to cry? You want me to fucking cry? You want me to weep?
No, because when
you want me to piss my pants? You want me to shit?
No, because for me, when people use boredom, my issue is people use boredom like nice, right? They go, oh, this person is nice, and then they like end it.
I don't think boredom is just a cutoff. I think there was a hard time for me to latch onto elements of the film to like engage my brain. And so you're just sitting there and there's just stuff happening and you're like, mind starts to wander and you're like, man, I wish I was doing something else right now.
Yeah, now you're just explaining boredom. I do think if you asked me, which you didn't, but I will pretend you did, like why I felt K-On! And this movie had a similarity, there was this funness is the word I concluded with at this convo. They had fun. K-On! Girls have fun. And I can, like, apparently it's not empathy because I have no empathy. I can do something with that fun.
Can I tell you something? You're like an emotional wife on this goddamn podcast sometimes. You know that? You're like, well, you didn't ask this, but I'm going to answer it anyways and pretend like you asked it.
No, you are.
You're like, you got your curlers in your hair.
That is
you got your curlers in your hair. You're waiting for me to get home after work. I had a hard day at the office and you're like, drinking a glass of wine. You're like, well, where were you? It's our anniversary. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
That was not a passive aggressive.
It was.
You called me the emotional wife, and then all you do is gaslight. That was not a passive aggressive thing. It was.
Are you saying women gaslight men, Walter? I don't think that sounds like very good ally.
Oh yeah, you're right. Reverse the roles.
I was actually talking with Anna. Shout out to Anna if you're listening right now. I met her at the bookstore. She's pretty cool. We ate falafel together recently, and I was talking to her about you. Have you ever noticed you don't say women? You say woman.
Okay. And
it's just, you just never use the plural to describe. It's always like these women are together and it's women.
I wonder if it's because Chinese doesn't have a plural form in our oral.
The reason I bring that up is I am a misogynist, right? I'm terrible. I'm a monster. Okay. I'm a degenerate. I'm an incel. Okay. I'm also a dyslexic.
You just didn't work hard enough.
Okay. My eyes and my body just didn't work hard enough. Sure. Fucking eat my asshole, Walter.
You just didn't study hard enough.
But fucking goddamn. So there was this time I was in a poetry course in college, and this like TA who was definitely in her 50s, we were all critiquing the poetry, and I can't remember which poem I brought. I thought it was an okay poem. Everyone's critiquing it. She goes, well, I think you should just sort of interrogate some of your internal misogyny a little bit. You always use the word woman when it should be woman. It should be W-O-M-E-N. And I remember thinking, if I'm not a misogynist before, I am one now. Fucking like, God, I was so heated. Trust me, I am capable of owning the fact that I have had unkind thoughts about women. Making yourself someone who's not terrible is always a work in progress. My spelling is not one of those things! It made me so angry. Because, like, it's been a problem my entire life.
Whatever, woman.
Whatever, woman! No, I was so...
It's also because you're super proud of language, so...
Yeah, and it's like, trust me, you can read some of my work and be like, oh yeah, that's a misogynistic thing you just wrote right there. And I can be like, yeah, that is. Either I did it on purpose, or like, oh, I didn't notice that. Maybe that's something I should reinterrogate. Not my spelling!
I think your long hair is kind of misogynist, just so you know.
And I think your hatred of Chinese women is misogynist.
Why does it always... When did I ever express my hatred? Maybe I did. I don't know.
Dude, I remember when you were drunk when you first moved back to Hong Kong and just being like, I hate Hong Kong women. Women from Hong Kong are terrible.
Talking about.
Fucking worthless.
There are too many Hong Kong women. Their entire identity is Disney. So after I said that, I think you guys understand why I was annoyed.
Yeah, but that's not how you were saying it. No, I think there's stuff you got to work on about your relationship with women in Hong Kong personally.
Oh, okay.
As a feminist, as an ally to women.
It's just because I spelled wrong.
Oh, it's just because you want to know what else I'm doing talking about being an ally to women? I am like such a pervert, and I can't help but look at people's butts when I'm at the gym. Like, I just really cannot stop myself. So I've started taking off my glasses while I work out so I cannot see any butts, just so there's no way I can stare at anyone's ass, because I can't see more than like 4 inches in front of my face.
Dude, I don't think I'm a pervert. I think I'm a degenerate.
I think you are a pervert. I think you are a disgusting pervert.
No, but I have no interest in looking at real people.
That's its own thing. That's its own weird, complicated thing. You're still a pervert.
Okay, fine.
You've just moved past human perversions and moved on to something deeply troubling.
That's what I meant. I'm just a degenerate.
Why did they call you a pervert that you were talking about in the last episode?
Okay, I was in sixth grade, so I think it's fine. I would used to, like, pretend I had a sperm gun and load my friend's sperms and, like, shoot at girls.
In sixth grade, you were doing this?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's bad, but it is emotionally stunted. It is, like, kind of a very juvenile thing to be doing in sixth grade.
But this was a very Christian school, too.
It's still... whatever.
Okay, first of all, Americans have sex at, like, 13. People do not have sex in this fucking country.
Okay, so maybe... So this is a classic Walter bit. I tell Walter that it's something weird. He says, it's just because I'm Chinese. You don't understand. You're not Chinese. And, like, sometimes it's probably accurate, but other times I find that he does this as a defense mechanism. He used to say this about eating with his hands. hands. We're messy in Hong Kong. We eat with our hands.
We are messy. Come to Hong Kong.
Bitch, every time you eat with your mom and dad, your hands are not messy.
No, my mom and dad are super fucking annoying because they go to China and complain about how loud everyone is.
So you're saying they've been cucked by the
West? Yes, my mom is fucking cucked by the West when it comes to food.
Is that why she only eats sandwiches?
No, she only eats salads.
Ugh.
Okay, can we talk about the music and the dance stuff?
Yeah, it sucked. It was bullshit. No, okay. Just kidding. It was good. I really liked seeing
Dude,
this.
Do you have any other joke besides being mean? I'm joking.
What do you, I have tons I'm of jokes. I have tons of jokes. I think some of the singing scenes are the saddest scenes.
Dude, fuck yes. Because
they're pretending to be happy.
Not even. Like, Helen had a bunch of singing scenes where she would sing and then have that space to be sad. Like the job one. She's, like, having fun with the piano and then her first song where she's behind the staircase and just singing a sad song.
Les hommes en somme fredonnent leur vie. Les hommes se donnent toujours à demi.
But what is she singing about in that scene? I don't remember what she's singing.
I think she's singing about men who think they know what they want.
I really like when they're waltzing.
The waltz was
great.
The
blonde goes over and, like, pantomimes putting on a Victrola or, like, a record player kind of thing. And then the record starts playing and she's just waltzing.
Easterik Americ, Easterik Americ. I can't do the accent, sorry.
Yeah, what accent was that supposed to be?
Hysterical America.
Easterik Americ, Americ.
I really love the waltz scene because I think it really captures why dance in movies for me is something I gravitate towards. Because those are the scenes where the camera has the most creativity. It's not just about what the camera follows. It's also like what the camera doesn't follow. This dancing was a great example because it followed them waltzing for a really long time. Then it got to a window. They danced off the camera and the camera was facing the window and then zoomed into the city. And then swishes right back to them waltzing again, and it helps the waltz's mystery and energy. It's pretty sick.
Qu'il est doux de danser la valse quand on n'a plus besoin d'aimer que les souvenirs nous dépassent que nul ne sait plus.
And then the whole scene gets interrupted out of nowhere by the third mistress who comes in and gives them a bunch of inheritance from everyone's dead husband, which is the Hysteric America song, which I thought was great too. But that whole fucking process of that dance scene into that Hysteric America, I had so much fun with that scene. And then with them at the end throwing money going, happy ending, happy ending.
Happy ending, happy ending, happy ending.
Except it's not a happy ending.
That one song where they're both drinking, finally Sonia admits that she had a child miscarriage. Then they break into song and Sonia's just sitting on a chair completely lifeless like a doll. And Helene comes and combs her hair. That song is so pretty.
Oh, yeah, that was beautiful.
That scene was so good. I fucking love that scene.
Triche leur âge, triche leurs yeux. Elle se fane à qui mue mieux. Triste leur âge, triste leurs yeux. Avec des regards de banlieue. Triche leur âge, triche leurs yeux. Et des bottines de valieux. Triste leur âge, triste leurs yeux.
Do you remember what she was singing?
Yeah. At the age where we are, no wonder we feel this sorrowful. Something like that.
Yes, yes, yes.
That
yes,
was
yes,
such
yes.
a good scene. Oh my God. I was fucking mind blown.
My favorite song is when Tony Stark is at the conference at the end of the movie, of the first Iron Man movie. And then he says, I am Iron Man. And his helmet comes down. And then they play Iron Man by Black Sabbath. That's my favorite song in this movie.
Do you have another joke? That was not even how I worded that first time.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
Fuck me. I'm so bad at jokes. This is why I found the film funny, I guess, because I don't know what a fucking goddamn...
Yeah, you don't understand how jokes work.
Rise and fall of fucking Chinese civilization inside a joke. How do I find a joke funny if I have to think about the whole China history inside one fucking joke?
I mean, not all jokes are that.
I might be a child, but your brain's a fucking robot. Is this a joke? Cannot compute. I have to think about acceleration and deceleration, potential energy and kinetic energy inside a joke. I had to get a physics major to fucking get a joke.
No, God, some jokes are just funny because like someone poops their pants.
Okay, if you watch someone just poop their pants in a movie, would you laugh?
Yes. Well, I mean, guys, this has to be funny that they like are like at a wedding and they don't want anyone to know that they pooped their pants and they're going to.
Okay, what if there's none of that? It's just someone pooped their pants and then their friend was like, "Oh, a- you found it funny. You found it funny, you asshole. Found it funny. You don't need the fucking rise and fall. Shut the fuck up with the rise and fall. God damn it.
No, it was just this funny face you made. That was like, oh.
I mean, they had funny faces, if you were paying attention. Jesus Christ.
No, it was boring. It was too boring. Iron Man didn't show up once in this movie.
Now we're talking about this again. The reason why I think I got a little, like, heightened is because usually when something's not funny, you say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get the joke. You don't go around telling people why that wasn't a joke. When Quentin Tarantino and I'm sitting in a Quentin Tarantino movie and all these motherfucking neckbeards and they're, like, constantly laughing and like, I don't go like, excuse me, guys, this is not a joke.
I'm saying the thing you were pointing at was not a joke, though. It might have made you laugh, but it was not a joke.
So why do you laugh at the poop thing?
Yeah, but that's just because your cheeky little face is so
okay
funny.
So what would you call it? What is it? What if it's not a joke? What is it?
Well, I mean, okay, so if you want to get back to the joke structure,
I didn't imagine
you would say, well, someone poops their pants, and then someone goes, oh, and so you've subverted my understanding of what you would respond to next. So it does have a little bit of a classical joke structure.
Can I say, okay, this film did try, they failed, and they weren't good at it in your fucking idealistic joke world because you're such a god of jokes. They failed. But that's what they were trying to do. Subvert your attention with some funny faces.
No.
You're just going to refuse it as a joke. Okay. It's not a joke.
No, I don't know. I also watched that, those parts.
No. It's like... fine if you don't think it's a joke. It's fine.
Somebody's feelings are hurt.
I am hurt. Look, you know what? Now that we've had this conversation, you're right. Robert Downey Jr. is a great actor. I just don't get it. Robert Downey Jr. is a great actor. Robert Downey Jr., you're a great fucking person. You're a great fucking person.
Forget your name. Shout out, bro. Maddie, in this last episode that just came out, really enjoyed the sound clips that we put in for the last episode and also really liked the cut of Aaron's cloth. You're gonna keep doing that, Walt?
I don't know. That's like actually something we should probably ask our listeners. I'll try to do it for this movie, but here's full disclaimer. The reason why we did it for the last movie is because Aaron gave me all of the clips. So Aaron gave me a bunch of the hard work. Me going through a film and looking for all the timestamps for it might feel like a little too much work for me, but if people really, really fucking love it, I will highly consider it because I'm always down to sacrifice my soul and energy and blood, sweat, and tears. What is Aaron's cloth, by the way? I didn't understand that.
The cut of Aaron's cloth? I think that's just like the cut of her gym.
Oh, it's like some fucking word the English people use. I get it.
No, like the cloth you're cut from, like your background.
The style, the vibe.
No, more like your past.
Oh, okay. Well, that's deep.
It is. Maddie's very deep.
Shout out Maddie for being deep. Thanks for the comments.
Becca started following us on Twitter. Pretty sure this is a backup account for a OnlyFans. But you know what? All the followers are good. Any follower is good.
Jamie, one of her big guests, also gave us a comment. Guys, love the new episode. Aaron is great. And Suede, maybe you stop constantly interrupting during the summary. It would be concise. SMH.
Now, see, that's bullshit, Jamie, because Walter edits them to be concise. They are not concise before Walter edits them.
Wow. That was a weird defense where you just complimented me. Shout out Aaron, too. Shout out Jamie first. And then shout out Aaron for getting us so many comments.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Busey.
Chairman Busey. You're right. Sorry. My apologies.
Also, fucking shout out to the Arby's on Brambleton. I got a sandwich over there again. The guy hooked me up, gave me some hot fries. Every episode, we're going to shout out the Arby's on Brambleton. Shout out. And if you're listening to this podcast because you've got a bookmark, shoot us an email. That's fakefilmfans@gmail.com. Shoot us a Twitter at Fake Film Fans. If you guys want to play Apex with us, let us know, because we will play Apex.
Suede is really good.
I'm like very bad. Walter's just 100 times worse. Walter is like the worst. I don't know what happened, but he's like so fucking bad at Apex Legends. It's despicable how bad he is. Mercy main, all the way B2A.
Oh, Overwatch.
Overwatch! Yeah, I don't know. Thanks for being here with us. We love you guys. We love this fucking show. The core listeners, you guys kick ass. And when we blow up, you will always be in our hearts. Even when we've got a million fans.
But if you want to be known as a core listener, make sure you message us.
Well, they've added. I mean, we've got Patrick from the bookstore.
He wants to do voice acting, I learned. That's really cool.
Yeah, so we could do some fun stuff with Patrick. Shout out to my boy Chris, who sent me a text message that says he is not a podcast purist. This is a friend of Patrick and I's. And that it was his first time listening to the episode. And he thought the ball sack thing was, that he was unprepared for it at 8 a.m. So shout out to Christopher. He's great. We love Chris.
Oh, so he continued listening
to
the
podcast. Yeah, he's listened to it more. So fucking shout out to Chris.
Well, I'm glad our degenerate shit, even though made you run into the bookstore, did not take you away. I actually, you know what, Chris? I actually am even more excited about that. That actually somehow makes me more happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like something that's so shocking that at first you don't want to touch, and then the more you think about it, you're kind of like, huh, maybe I will watch a new scat porn video.
Jesus Christ, Walter. Christopher loves the writer Fitzgerald, amongst many things like that. So how do you feel about F. Scott Fitzgerald?
I don't know. I only know Great Gatsby. I'm sorry. And I don't think when someone says, I like F. Scott Fitzgerald, they're talking about Great Gatsby.
Oh, no. Chris is into the deep Snickle Fritz.
Yeah, this would be like, oh my God, I love Godard because I love fucking Pierre Lefeu.
Or I love art house movies because I love Dravida.
I mean, you can try tossing that one out, Sway. Let's see how far you go before someone's like, I bet everyone just backs off because they're like, wow, he's so smart and so cool.
That has happened a couple times.
Really?
It's like, yeah. And they're like, wow, you know a lot about movies. And I'm like, no, I don't. I literally know that one.
Hey, you can reference this film. I feel like this film might even give you, like, I feel like more people watch FemFems. Speaking of art house films, me and Slade watched this movie on a website called rarefilm.com, which is spelled rarefilmm.com. And this is something Suede really pushed for.
Yes.
So we're going to be shouting out the websites we watch the movies on, especially if they're free and streaming. Rare Film is run by John, who you can follow on Twitter at Rare Film, the same as the website. I think the website is amazing. I don't know how it exists, but it has a bunch of overlooked, cool films on there from a lot of different countries and a lot of genres. They're just all sort of, like, even Criterion Collection is not going to be paying attention to these films. Also, I should add that I'm going to be taking an editing break for a while, which means that we're not going to be shouting out people for maybe a month or so. However, don't worry, if you send us a message, we'll just read them all once I get back.
Yeah.
There will still be episodes. We're just going to be releasing pre-recorded episodes.
Well, I guess there's nothing left to say, unless, Walt, do you have any dumb shit you gotta pour out of your mouth?
Au revoir, madame. Bon vas, madame.
Bon vas. And remember, if you're going to listen.
You don't know what I'm referring to, huh?
No, I have no clue. I was just going to do a French accent.
Do you want to explain, or are you over it?
No, explain it. Explain it.
When the prostitute says, you guys got to get off my curb. Sonia goes, see you, madam. Good fuck, madam.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. Just remember.
That was my dumb shit.
Can you let me end the show,
that
please?
That was my dumb shit. That was my French
accent.
Why don't
you end the show? Why don't you fucking
okay,
end the show?
That's my French accent.
That's not you end the show.
That's my French accent. That's my French accent.
If you're gonna watch a
movie.
That's
my French accent.
dude with the lights on.